they were sanctified because the firstborn of the Egyptians died. Right? That's what it says. Because I went out in Egypt and I killed the firstborn, so your firstborn are mine. What is the real meaning of that statement? Because I killed the firstborn of the Egyptians, therefore your firstborn are mine. I mean, it's not, it just doesn't follow. What does one have to do with the other? Says the Amek Dor like this. I'm going to read you certain parts of the statement. Yesh ladatz, you should know. The k'moy kol kochos hagdusho, all holy things that exist in the world, mispalim venizonim beor pnei melamachem lochim hakodesh boruch. In other words, the source of everything that exists in kedusha is God. Kach, the same way, kol kochos hatumo, all negative forces in the world, all bad forces in the world, right? Evil, right? Malachamoves, death, evil, all negative forces in the world. Where do they draw their life? In other words, what makes them, gives them the capacity to exist? Ein mokor chiusom bo, elo memokoim elyon isborach. The same source that gives life to Kedusha gives life to Tumo. The same source that gives life to the Tzaddik is the one that gives life to the Rosho. Ulezeha hoiroin, to teach you this idea, we bring in Yom Kippur two Seiri, two goats. Echod leshem, one for God, ve'echod la'azozel. Lazozel, the idea is away from God, far from God, the other side of God. So why are they both goats? In order to teach you the idea that they both have the same source that gives them existence. It's an incredible statement. Afalgav, Shezeligdusho, even though one goat is Kodosh, and one is the exact opposite of Kodosh, he goes Lazozel, which is the exact opposite of Kedusho. Lelamdeinu, this teaches us shemokor chius kol nivro memokoy mechod yoytzi. Vimkein, I'm skipping a little bit. Vimkein, begilui shechino, when God Himself comes out to Egypt, ani yotzei besoch Mitzrayim, which means that there is an incredible intensity of shechino at that moment. God Himself comes down to Egypt. Hakol mispalim. I mean, that has a tremendous effect of everything. Vekasher ovar Hashem beretz Mitzrayim, yotzu kol koichos haruchnim betumo. So all the kochos hatumo of Egypt came out to draw their existence from the presence of God. If we are saying that all negative forces in the world draw their existence from God Himself, so when God's presence is very intense, obviously, then the power to draw from that presence is also intensified. Ve'kasher chal aleihem shefa izgalus Hashem ve'heim enom ruim lekach. And then he says something else. What about when you receive the shefa of Hashem, right, the light of Hashem, but you have not developed the recipient to absorb it? Then that positive power of Hashem can become destructive. Which means like this. Light makes you see better. But when the light is too intense and you haven't developed the instruments to absorb the light, then the light can blind you. So what's light? Does light give you light or light gives you darkness? Light gives you both. Now, the source is the same. The source is or, light. If you have developed the proper recipients, the proper instruments to absorb the light, you will benefit from the light. If not, the light will cause you to be blind. In other words, the light will cause darkness. So there is no difference in the shefa, in the influence, in the aura of Hashem. The difference is in the receiver, in the recipient. Al-Kain, therefore, Nizuku alidei mechablim keteva agdusho, beshoshi le maso la murgosh. because of the intensity of the presence of Hashem at that moment. This is why the ones who are the natural recipients of Kedusha, who are the natural recipients of Kedusha? The Bechoros, the firstborn. Now, the firstborn is the natural priest. Natural, by natural I mean that according to the way the natural structure of the world is supposed to work, who is supposed to be this? What's a priest? A spiritual leader. Who is supposed to be the spiritual leader in every household, in every family? The natural leader. Of course, the firstborn, right? The father is busy, the mother is busy. In the family, in the large family, the firstborn is the natural leader, the natural spiritual leader. He is the natural carrier of the Kedusha, and the one we're supposed to spread the Kedusha to others, right? This is why, who were the Kohanim by the Jews in its beginnings? Even without any appointment, that's the natural Kodosh, okay? Now, since the Bechor has the natural responsibility to carry on his shoulders the Kedusha, so he was the instrument through which that enormous, intense presence of Hashem is supposed to be spread, right? That caused the death of the Egyptians. It doesn't say that God killed the Egyptians, right? God's presence caused that the Egyptian Bechoros, who are the natural priests, right? That the intensity of Hashem's presence should be so great that they shouldn't be able to take it, and when you are not able to take it, that's when you die. And there is such a concept, if you remember the Jews in Har Sinai, right? What do they say? Why didn't they want to hear God? It's too much. Because if he continues talking, what's going to happen? Remember, it says, we are going to die. It says, in other words, if we are not ready, it's a tremendous effort to maintain that level of being able to receive. And if you are not at that level, it may destroy you. That is what destroyed the Egyptians. But at the same time, since it's not that God killed the Egyptians, that's not how it happened at all. God went out. The intensity of God's presence was felt. And therefore, the Egyptians, Bechoros, who naturally weren't at the level of absorbing God's presence, automatically they disappeared. So automatically, what happened to the Jewish Bechoros? They were Mekudosh. They were naturally became Kodosh. So this is what it means. When it says later on that because the Egyptian Bechoros died, therefore you are Kodosh, what it really means is not, I did you a favor, so therefore you belong to me. That's not the idea. The idea is that the same presence of Hashem that caused the death of the Egyptian Bechoros is the same reason that caused the Jewish Kedusha, the Jewish Bechoros Kedusha. That's what makes the Jewish Bechor Kodosh, says the Amigdovor. Nimtzo, Havoras Hashem Be'atzmoy, that's why God himself has to go out to Egypt. Because that is just an expression of the intensity of Hashem's presence. When Hashem sends an angel, that seems to minimize the intensity of Hashem's presence. And the whole point is that it's the intensity of the presence of Hashem that destroys the recipients of that Kedusha. In other words, Bechor Mitzrayim. So it says, Hu ha-gorem hativi sheyomusu. So it was natural, the death of the firstborn. It wasn't that Hashem passed and he killed this one and he killed this one and he killed this one. It happened in a natural way. When they weren't able to receive the experience that they were having, they just died. So, Vim hoyas his galus kovoy duchas malachoy soro. Etc., etc. So that is the idea. So according to Amek Dover then, the whole point in Ani Yotzei Besoit Mitzrayim, and that's what the Agoda says, Ani Veloi Malach, Ani Veloi Shaliach, so it's not a matter, it doesn't make a difference, is it God that kills the Bechoros, it's not killing the Bechoros. It's telling you the essence how the world works. The world works with one set of koichos. Everything that exists in the world is one source, Hashem. How can evil koichos receive from God? Well, that's the point. when the presence of God is too intense, then it could become evil. It could become destructive. In other words, what is death? Death is when man separates himself from God to such a degree that instead of attaching himself to eternity, right, he separated himself from eternity. So automatically he became mortal. In other words, the mortality of man is not a result of God creating death. God doesn't create death. God creates eternity, right? Death is just a result of the fact that we became flawed recipients of that eternity, therefore we became mortal, right? Darkness became a reality when the light wasn't able to be absorbed, so then it became the power against light, the contrast of light. That's darkness. In other words, the source of everything is Kedusha. Non-Kedusha has to do with the recipients. That's what the Amek Dover says over here. This is why the Kedusha that was given to the Bechor Israel and the death of the Egyptians is not two separate actions. He happened to have sanctified the Jewish firstborn and he happened to have killed the Egyptian firstborn. That's not at all what happened. It's all the same experience that to the Egyptians caused the death. To the Jews, it caused the sanctification. This is what Ani Yotze B'Tochi Mitzrayim means.
What does it mean that they had to go in their houses and hide
from Hashem? What do you mean? The Jews?
Yeah.
No, well, according to Amek Dover, that only applied to the Gedolei Israel. The Amek Dover says that doesn't apply to the average Jew. Nothing would have happened to him even if he walked out. And it says, the Gemara says it. What happened to a Jew who was in an Egyptian house? Did anything happen to him? Nothing happened to him. It's not that God needed the blood as a reminder. It was just an act of the Jew to remind himself of his obligation. It's not that really nothing would have happened to the Jew.
So this is a klal then?
That's a klal. I mean, that's what I'm telling you. It's all over. It's a klal. That's not only here.
So even this klal, as I would say, you have a certain amount of level of Gilui Shechinah. And when a person can no longer relate to that level of Gilui Shechinah, then he dies.
It's not that he dies. I mean, it becomes a destructive force. It becomes a destructive force.
Right.
It becomes a destructive force, meaning the negative forces, the koichos hatumo, draw their existence from the same source of the koichos. That's the incredible chiddush of the Amigdor, which it, really we find it in early writing in the Maral, for instance. This idea, right, that the chius, the life of everything, really is kedusha. It's only when it becomes distorted, that Kedusha becomes Tumah. In its original sense, in its original form, it's all Kedusha. Everything is Kedusha. There is nothing else but Kedusha. Right? It's only a flaw of the recipient that causes the Kedusha to become Tumah.
I'm understanding why it was only the chorus of the Mitzrayim. They were the most sensitive Tumah?
Yeah, of course, because their responsibility was the greatest. Because, as I told you, the natural Bechor, the natural Kohen is the Bechor. It's not an appointed Kohen. Right? Meaning, the world was structured in such a way, don't forget that the idea of Kehuna is not something that came into the world when Jews came into the world. The concept of Kehuna is a concept that's born together with Odom Orisho, which means there has to be someone who should guide the rest of the people in the right way. That is the Kohen, that's the priest. So of course he can guide the people in the wrong ways. That is a Kohen Lavo Dezore. But the idea of a Kohen is just a person who is committed to guiding other people in the right way. Malkitzedek, Melech Sholem, if you remember, what does it say? Vehu Kohen Lekele Leon. He's a Kohen. Meaning, right? Avram Avinu is a Kohen, by the way. He's a Kohen, right? That's why he sacrifices. He's a Kohen. As a matter of fact, in the Midrash it says all our avos were Kohanim. In what sense? What do you mean? They were from Shevet Levi? They were descendants of Aaron? No, they were the real Kohanim, the one that took upon themselves the job of directing the rest of the Jews. It's only when the Kohanim, our natural Kohanim, fail in their job that the job is taken away from them, right? By Har Sinai. But until Har Sinai, the natural Kohen is the Bechor, not Shevet Levi.
with all the merits of the Shevet Levi, they were not the Kohanim of the Jews. Now, when did the concept of Kehuna become institutionalized, right? When did they become, no, only these people are Kohanim. We Jews are the Kohanim of the world. Right? We Jews are the Kohanim. Atem tiyuli mamleches Kohanim v'goy kodesh. That's our job in the world, to be the spiritual leaders of the world. That's our job. That's why we Jews are Kohanim. We are called Kohanim. Right? That's what it says in the Torah. Atem tiyuli mamleches Kohanim v'goy kodesh. Okay? In other words, when the Jews were chosen as the Kohanim of the world, the job was taken away from all the Gentiles. In other words, Gentiles ceased to have the job of Kehuna. Kehuna is taken away from Gentiles, which they had before. Who are the Kohanim of the Gentiles? Gentiles. Malkitzedek, right? Shame. They had their own Kohanim. But from now on, it's the Jews and no one else. When is the point that Kehuna is just taken away from the world? Here in Mitzrayim. Kehuna is taken away from the Bechor Mitzrayim, and it's given, it's concentrated to the Bechor Israel. This is when Kehuna becomes part of the structure of Klal Israel, right? We became Kohanim through our Bechoros, okay? And then after the failure of the Bechoros through the Shevet Levi, or the chosen of the Shevet Levi, which are the descendants of Aaron, okay? But the concept of Kehuna is now established as part of Klal Israel, now, this moment, okay?
Today, is the firstborn still in active spiritually in each family?
He has lost it, you see, because after the Egel Azov, they have lost it. But the remnant still exists. In other words, he still has to go through a process of redeeming his original status, right? Even today he has to go through a process of redeeming his original status.
So you're saying that each individual family today doesn't actually require its own spiritual
life? Not anymore. But we have to remember that that's a flaw, that's a failure in Yiddishkeit. That was the natural kahuna should be within each family. Not, you know, it's the less structured kahuna is, the better kahuna is. The more it has to be institutionalized kahuna, the more it shows the failure of the system. When we failed, when the natural system failed by Egel Azov, then it has to be more institutionalized. But we have to remember our failure, right? When we make the process of Pidyon HaBen, that's a remembrance of our failure. We didn't do what was supposed to be.
Is that fixed now? Or when Mashiach comes, will it change?
I don't know, but at this point it shows a failure in the way it was supposed to be. The natural system is the best.
Wasn't it also back in the Bereshit was promised to Abraham that I myself will take you out of the Egypt?
Does it say that I myself? Of course, even that is not a commitment of such an experience, because I myself can meet through a shaliach, shaluchoi shalodom kemoso. A man's agent is like himself, right? The stress of God's presence, of course, has a special meaning. Yeah.
If God made Israel the firstborn and made them the nation that received the Torah, how do you explain Midrash that says at Sinai he gave all the other nations another chance?
All the chances that you see that other nations had after Mitzrayim, all the chances that when you read something like, well, God went around trying to convince other nations to receive the Torah. He went to Moab and he went to Ammon and he went to Ishmael, and each one asked them, what is written over there? And God told them, written this and this and this. And they said no, right? Does that mean that if they would have said yes, they would have come the chosen nation? Not at all. I mean, because you realize that the difficulty. If God gave it to everybody and everybody refused against except the Jew, why are we called the chosen nation? It's not chosen. We chose him, not he chose us. The answer is that all those Gemaras express the idea, you know, that in this, the whole idea of Kehuna is the idea of the pyramid. There is always a Kohen, and then there is a Kohen's, every Kohen has a Levi. Like, for instance, Klal Israel is the Kohen of the world. Klal Israel. But we need our own Kohanim. Who are they? The Levim. But they need their own Kohanim. Who are they? The descendants of Aaron. But they need their own Kohen. So you have the Kohen Gadol. So you have a pyramid of Kehune. So in reality, that pyramid shouldn't have stopped by the Jews. Right? Who should have been like the Levites of the Jews? They had a chance. Esav could have been. Ishmael could have been. Ammon could have been. Moab could have been. Many nations had a chance to be the second best. In other words, the Levites to the Jewish Kehune. They all failed, but whenever you see those Gemara that says that they were offered not as a substitute for the Jew. They were offered as someone to join the Jew in his job to sanctify the world. That's all it means. Now, thinking in Pasuk Zion, you always read it and you wonder what it really means. Uchol Bnei Israel and to all Jews, Lo Yechratz Kelev Lishono, which really means that no dog barked at the Jews. What is the meaning of this? And what does the Torah want to point out that no dog barked at the Jew? And then what the Torah says, Lemante dun, in order that you should know Asher Yafle Hashem ben Mitzrayim ben Yisrael, that Jews are different than Gentiles. Jews are just different than Egyptians. So we needed the dog to tell that the Jews are different than Egyptians. What's the point? It says that again, the Amid and Etziv, the Amid Dor, it's beautiful. It's an amazing thing. There's a Gemara in Bava Kamma, it's Samachomet Bet. Bava Kamma, it says like this. When Eliyahu Hanavi comes to a place, he comes to a city, Eliyahu Hanavi, you know, there's such a thing as Giloy Eliyahu. Giloy Eliyahu, there's a certain level of prophecy that was even maintained after prophecy is over. There is a certain communication that you can have with Eliyahu Hanavi. It's like a low level of prophecy. So when in the city there is a Giloy Eliyahu, before the humans sense it, you know who senses it first, says the Gemara? The dogs. Incredible statement. Then the Gemara says, same Gemara, Samachomet Beis Mobekame. When the Malach HaMoves, the angel of death, comes, before people sense it, you know who senses it? The dog senses it, says the Gemara. Says the Amek Dovor. So what do you see from it? The dogs have a sixth sense. They have a sense that human beings don't have. In other words, Hashem gave the dog a certain sense that no one else has. You know, an incredible thing. I remember reading not so long ago that in China they are trying to develop ways of being able to predict earthquakes. And this is one of the most difficult things. How to predict earthquakes? You know one of the methods that they are using? Did you read it? Dogs. The dogs are able to sense the coming of an earthquake before it actually happens. It's an interesting thing. But the Gemara says that what?
How do they communicate it though? That
I don't know. Maybe they have a language. But anyway. But it's interesting that the Gemara says that they have, and the Amigdala says they have a sixth sense. So what's the point here? Point here is, says the Amigdala. Remember the Amigdala's opinion, that the Jews who went out of Egypt were not all righteous, far from it, right? Remember, in the Yemei HaChoshech who died, those that didn't want to go out, but even those that did want to go out, not all of them were righteous. There were many Rishonim, there were many wicked people among the Jews that went out. Now, the Egyptian looks at the Jew and he says, why is he better than me? I don't understand. Why is he better than me? Why is he going through miracles and we have to suffer so much? Why is he better than me? Is there really a difference? You know who told him that there is a difference? His dog. In other words, it's true. According to our five senses, we can't tell the difference. Meaning, there are Jews in such a low level that you can't tell them between them what's the difference between them and the Gentiles. You need someone with a sixth sense to realize the difference between Jew and Gentile. Meaning, on the surface they are all alike, but they are not really. You need a dog for it. That's the pshat in the pasuk. Take a look how it fits beautifully. Ulechol bnei Israel, all the Jews, whether righteous or wicked, lo yechasker v'les l'shoyno, lemeish v'ad behemo, leman teidun, in order that the Egyptians should know, asher yafle Hashem, that Hashem makes a separation be Mitzrayim v'en Israel. Why do you need the dog to tell you that there is a difference? Because you can't tell. We are talking about wicked Jews that aren't any better than the Egyptians. So it says, don't worry about it. Essentially, they are different. You can't sense it. Look, your dog, who has a sixth sense, he can sense it. That's what the Amigdala says. Now, in chapter Yudbet, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe el Aharon ben Mitzrayim lemor, Hachodesh hazeh lochem rosh chodoshim, rishon hu lochem lechodshei hashono. Hachodesh hazeh. Says, so in Posuk Bet in Rashi, Hachodesh hazeh. What does it mean, Hachodesh hazeh? Hazeh, usually you say when you are pointing to something, you say zeh, right? This. Why does it say Hachodesh hazeh? It should say Hachodesh haba, or Hachodesh. Why Hachodesh hazeh? Says Rashi. Hero levono bechidusho. God himself pointed to the new moon, and it says Vomaloi keshayoreach mischadesh yeh lecho Rosh Chodesh. Okay? This is what Rosh Chodesh is. Therefore, Chodesh Nisan has to be counted by Jews as the first month. We're not allowed to count Tishrei as the first month. So now we have a funny combination. When we are counting months, which is the first month of the year? Nisan. Which is the first day of the year? Rosh Hashanah. So we have a funny combination. Rosh Hashanah is in Tishrei, but that's as far as days are concerned. But as far as months are concerned, that is Nisan. Why? Because we are referring to two experiences. One is the creation of the world, and when we are talking about the creation of the world, we are talking about Rosh Hashanah. That's the creation of the world, the creation of Odom Orishon. When we are talking about the creation of Klal Israel as a Klal, as an Umo, as an independent nation, that is Chodesh Nisan. And why is it related to the month? Right? So it says in all this foreign, because the moon represents symbolically Klal Israel. The moon represents Klal Israel. Why? The same way that the moon has ups and downs, sometimes it's full, it shines completely, and sometimes it seems to disappear. That is the koyach of Klal Israel, that even though it's so close that it seems to disappear, it will always be rejuvenated, it will always come up again, it will always revive again. That is the power of Klal Israel. We have the power of the moon. That is the koyach of Klal Israel. So it says like this in the brocho of Kiddush Levono, right? We say the brocha like this, that the God should bring the day lemalois pegimas halevono, that God should bring the day that the moon shouldn't shrink anymore. It's a very funny prayer. I mean, why do we care if the moon does shrink or doesn't shrink? And that's important, right? Velo yebo shumiu, right? And the moon should become like the sun, kiyor sheshes imei breishis, right? And the posuk should be fulfilled. Remember that the end of the prayer. Does anybody have the siddur with the? I forgot already the nusach over there. That the moon should never shrink again. You have the kiddush levonah. Remember where?
Off the Shabbos. 6:12.
What 6?
12. No. It's off the Shabbos.
Okay. 6:12. Right here. Listen to this nusach. Lemalo is pegima salevono, velo yeboshu miu. Right? Vieskayem bonu mikro shekosu. And once the moon will be full, the posuk should be fulfilled. Uvikshu es Hashem Elokeihem, the people will search God. Ves David Malcolm and David Amelech. Now, what does that have to do with the moon? What does David HaMelech have to do with the moon? And then again, we say, David Melech Israel Chai V'Kayim, David Israel Chai V'Kayim. It's a very important thing, saying David HaMelech. It's connected with David HaMelech. What is the connection between Kiddush Levono and David HaMelech? Simple, because the whole idea of the shrinking of the moon and the filling up again, that we are saying here, it's all a symbol for Klal Yisrael. So when we say Lemalo is Pgima Salevono, is it that we care so much for the moon? It hurts us so much that the moon shrinks. That's not the point. Mm. Since the moon represents Klal Yisrael, HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem, which means that the Chodesh is you. Now, that's the drash. You are the Chodesh. You are represented. You are symbolized by the Chodesh. So we talk in symbols. When we say lemalo is gimas alevono, we know what we really mean. We mean that Klal Yisrael shouldn't have the downs again, right? It should keep up, right? And then the pasuk should be fulfilled, and they should ask for David Malkum. What does it mean? Mashiach, of course. You know, it was the coming of the Mashiach is the fulfillment of the day when the moon will be filled. So that's the idea. The idea is Achodesh Hazel Lochem Rosh Chodeshim, that Klal Yisrael is associated to Chodesh, because Chodesh is the symbol of Klal Yisrael. Just want to say, I have to choose from the midst of Korban Pesach. There is a Rashi which is it's a Chazal, but it's an extremely difficult Rashi. Take a look at this Rashi when it says in a chapter 12, Posuk Memches 48. It says like this: Vehiyogri Choger. And when a right, when a ger will live with you, right, also Pesach Lashem, and he does the Korban Pesach. Now, what ger? The word ger in the Torah is not 100% clear all the time. Ger can mean someone who lives here, and ger can mean a convert. In this case, if it says, and if a ger comes, makes a Pesach with you, what is it talking about? What kind of a ger? A convert, ger tzedek, right? He can do the Korban Pesach, he should be like everybody else. In other words, he should make the Korban Pesach like everybody else, says Rashi. Rashi is bothered. Why does the Torah have to tell you that a ger does the Korban Pesach like everybody else? Is a ger a Jew or is not a Jew? Does it say that a ger has to put on tefillin? Of course not. I mean, why shouldn't he? He's a Jew like every other Jew. Why should there be a pasuk specifically about a ger keeping the Korban Pesach? There's no reason. So says Rashi, because the reason is, we might have thought, says Rashi, Yochul kol ha-mizgar yaseh Pesach miyad, because we might have the havamine that when a goy becomes a Jew, the first thing he has to do is to bring a Korban Pesach. Whether he becomes a ger in Eor, Sivan, December, February, it doesn't make any difference. The first thing he does is bring a Korban Pesach. A private Korban Pesach. Comes the Pasuk and tells you, no, you don't have to do it. Wait till Nissan comes around and do it with everybody else. Okay, that's how Rashi answers the Pasuk. The Pasuk comes to teach you that to teach the Ger, you don't have to bring your own private Korban Pesach as soon as you become a convert. And the question is the Havyamine. Why should it occur to us that a ger, the first thing that he has to do is to bring a Korban Pesach? It doesn't make any sense. Right? The Havamin is difficult. So, point is like this. You see, there is a law in Korban Pesach that you don't have by any other mitzvah. Every other mitzvah, for instance, if you ask somebody, a Jew who hasn't been circumcised, is he mechuyev in putting on tefillin? Tzitzis, Shabbos. And what's the other meaning? Not just because he didn't keep one mitzvah, he can't do another mitzvah. What does one have to do with the other? So he does one thing wrong, so therefore he has to do everything else wrong. What is the exception to this rule? Here it is. Kol oreil lo yoichal boi. Posuk memches at the end. A person who is not circumcised is not allowed to eat a Korban Pesach. I don't care why he's not circumcised. Even if it's by accident he's not circumcised. You are not circumcised, you can't eat a Korban Pesach. Incredible. Not only that. If you have a slave, right? A slave, you were Koni Evet Knani, and you didn't circumcise him. Can't eat the Korban Pesach. What does one have to do with the other? Why should one depend on the other? Just because I don't have bris milah, I shouldn't have Korban Pesach. Right? Why would one mitzvah depend on the fulfillment of another mitzvah?
Well, here there's the one mitzvah represents the individual responsibility of a Jew, and the other represents the collective responsibility.
Okay, good. Where'd you hear it? Yeah, good. The point is like this. We find that bris milah and Korban Pesach have a lot in common. They are both called bris, a pact, right? They both are related to dam, the domai chayi, if you remember the drash, Dam Milo and Dam Korban Pesach. Except what is the difference between Milo and Korban Pesach? The difference is the following. Milo is the individual Jew committing himself to the way of Hashem. That's what Milo represents. Avraham Avinu, the individual Jew, before he became a nation, right? Hashem didn't wait to command the Jewish people to circumcise themselves. It's the individual Jew is supposed to circumcise himself. In other words, it's the expression of the personal commitment to Hashem. That is Bris Milo. Then, when the Jew becomes a nation, a group, when does it become an independent group? Now, tonight, right? The night of Pesach. Now, you need a new pact. Now, it's a pact of the group and Hashem. That's the new Bris, the new commitment to Hashem as a group. Now, there is a tremendous danger that a person will say, I'll give up my personal commitment and I'll only keep the group commitment. Right? I am a Jew, right? I act like a Jew, I belong to a Jewish club, or whatever it is. In other words, anything that expresses your commitment to Judaism as a group. In my own personal life, I live like a Gentile. Can you do it? Does it have any meaning? Says the Torah, if you don't have the first commitment, don't bother with the second one because it has no meaning. You're not even allowed to do it. First, you need the personal commitment of Bris Milo. Then you need that second step, which is the commitment to Klal Yisrael as a group. This is why Korban Pesach is not eaten individually. How is it eaten? By Sechot, everybody together. Everybody together. The idea is, it's the unit, it's the group. That's also important. But that's second to the personal commitment. So let's chat in the Rashi now. We might have a Havi Aminu. That the same way that a ger, how does a ger become Jewish, right? So the tvilo is the rejuvenation. You become kekot shenoy ladomi, like a new birth, right? That's the tvilo. You purify yourself. But what is the act of commitment to the personal commitment to serve Hashem? That's bris milo. So we would have had a havi aminu that you need the second step. What is the second step? Korban Pesach. That's where Rashi gets it. That's where Chazal gets it. We might have had a Havi Aminu. That every ger, the moment he becomes a ger, he needs to circumcise himself and to do the Korban Pesach. Comes the Torah and tells you, no. You just belong to the group. The main thing is the personal commitment. But now we can understand the Havi Aminu. We can understand why would we even have thought. Because Korban Pesach is a bris like Milo, except in a different sense. But this is why the Torah stresses here. In all other mitzvahs are not related with each other. You're not circumcised, you can still put on tefillin. But if you're not circumcised, and you're going to make the Korban Pesach, you're going to fool yourself. You're going to say, as long as I do the Korban Pesach, I don't have to mal myself. I don't have to circumcise. As long as I have my group identity with the Jewish people, that's sufficient. There is no such a thing. It has no value if you don't have a personal commitment to Hashem. Now, another interesting thing that I saw... I just want to tell you. You remember the statement in the Haggadah? In the Haggadah, it says, "By the Ben Rosho, what you answer the Ben Rosho, Bavurze also Hashem li betzeisem in Mitzrayim. God did it to me, and not to you." So it says like this in the Haggadah: "Ilu hoyo shom, if the Rosho would have been there, loy hoyo nigol, he wouldn't have been redeemed." Remember that statement? This is the Haggadah. So I remember it always bothered me that that's not true. It's not true. That makes sense only if all the Rishoyim were left behind, and we know that that's not true. I told you the Amik Dovor, and even before the Amik Dovor, it says in the Gemara, you know, Doson Vaviro, they're not nice people at all, and they survived the Choshech. So you can't say that all the Rishoyim died in the Mea Choshech. It says specifically, you know which Rishoyim died in the Mea Choshech? Only those that openly said, we don't want to leave. If you were a Rosho, but you still wanted to leave, you made it through Makas Choshech. Which means, and the Amik Dovor says clearly, as I told you a few times, that the Jews were, there were a lot of Rishoyim among the Jews. So if so, what does the statement mean? Ilu hoyo shamoy lo yonigo. So just because he's a Rosho, he would have made it anyway. Okay? So it's interesting how a different version can give you an insight into what it really means. If you take a look in Rashi, in this statement in the posuk in posuk in chapter Gimel posuk Ches. That's the answer to the Ben Horosho. Bigadto levincho bayomahu leimor. You have that 13:8. I'm sorry, Yud Gimel Ches. Bigadto levincho bayomahu leimor bavurze asu Hashem li betzisim mimitzroim. Says Rashi posuk Ches bavurze. Also Hashem Li, the second Rashi, Remes Tshuva Leben Rosha. From here we learn out what should we answer to the Rishoyim. Now it's that got it. Leymor. Also Hashem Li veloy loch. She'ilu hoiso shom, loy hoiso kedai li goel. Just with a little change in the word. Which word does Rashi add in the Mechilta, by the way? The source for the Agoda Shel Pesach in that part is the Mechilta. It's a very early midrash. What was the version that Rashi had?
Kedai.
Kedai. That makes the biggest difference in the world. You know what the Kedai means? Worthy of. Merit. He wouldn't have merited to go out. Would he have gone out anyway? Sure, but not because of his merit, because of everybody else's merit. That's the way Rashi understood the point. The interesting part is I checked the original version of the Mechilta. And it's not like Rashi, it's the way we have it. It says, Ilu hoyo shom lo yoyo nigal. If it would have been there, it wouldn't have been redeemed. I am convinced that Rashi changed the word here just to clarify the meaning of the Mechilta. When the Mechilta says, if he would have been there, he wouldn't have been redeemed, doesn't mean he wouldn't have gone out. He wouldn't personally have merited to be redeemed. That's the meaning of the Agoda Shel Pesach. So it answers the question. It's not that we are saying if you would have been there, you wouldn't have made it. The whole point in the Agoda is, what are you trying to tell the Rosh Hashem? You know, it says, how come we even talk to him? Keneged arbo bonim dibro toiro. The Torah talks to four sons. Right? To the Rosh Hashem, you shouldn't even say. And these are the sons of Israel, the sons of Jacob, who came with their father, eight Yaakov, with their father, and is with. So how come it says, you shall rebuke with your friend? It should be to your friend. So I said, nah, because the whole idea of rebuke is that you should feel with him. If you really are pained, if it really bothers you that he's doing something wrong, and you want to share your pain for his avera, for his transgression with him, then it's going to work. If you rebuke le'amitecho, it will never work. Don't bother. Hocheach tocheach et amitecha, with your friend. If you feel with him, then your rebuke will work. Okay? This is a statement by one of the great Hasidic interpreters, Sfasemes. So now, I take it one step forward. This idea of the Sfat Emet says like this. It says